I'm Sandy, and I'm a grateful recovering addict. And it's always usually a pleasure and an honor to speak when I'm asked to. And, you know, Michelle asked me first, and I said, sure. And then she said, we're doing topics. And I was like, oh, my gosh. And, you know, so then I had to wait like a day and a half before, she got back to me about what the topic was. And it's very fitting, I feel. You know, the progression of this disease is different for each and every one of us, but we're all the same in the end, I believe. Sometimes it's slow and sometimes it's fast. For me, I was in addiction for about 30 years before I got this program. And, you know, I feel that when I see someone young come into this program and they you know, are just getting it, I'm telling them that you don't have to go through the things I went through before you get this gift of recovery, because I came here when I was 18, went to my first meeting, and I didn't think I was anything like anybody. You know, I had a vision, I guess, of you know, what I thought an addict was, and many people told me I was an addict, but of course I was in denial. And the first time I came to the rooms was because I was on probation, and I looked at differences, and I didn't look at the similarities that people were telling me about their lives and where they had been and what had happened. So, you know, my ex had told me, you know, we were at my friend's house, and there was a movie on about a woman smoking some crack, and he said, that's going to be you if you don't, you know, straighten up. And I was like, you're crazy, you know. I remember being in addiction and seeing people, you know, I don't know, you know, crawling the carpet or whatever. And I said, you know, I would never do that. And I did. You know, other people saw my, like, weight loss, my, my dishonesty, my, lies and deception. And I just kept denying everything. And finally, my friends went to my family. And these are friends that, you know, their lives seem to be somewhat manageable, but they were concerned enough about mine that they, you know, went to my family and said, she's out of control, you know, and I can't stand to watch her die. Aren't you seeing this? And my parents really didn't, they didn't really know about my crack addiction because they just, they really didn't know much about addiction. And I stayed away from my family. I avoided anybody that I, you know, that really truly loved me because I didn't love myself and I couldn't bear to even look in the mirror at sometimes. Of course, this disease affects us mentally, physically, and spiritually. It took everything I had from me. My children, my son moved out when he was young. It wasn't just my drug addiction. It was just the way I was living, my lifestyle. The people I chose to have in my life. My daughter didn't really notice too much of what was going on, but I would leave and not come back for hours. I was just always trying to fill the voids with my drugs. And, you know, the progression we all know, like I started drinking way young and, you know, it just went to every other drug. I thought if I, you know, the alcohol made me sick. The, you know, pills didn't get me high enough. The, you know, I had some back surgery and got into some other pills later on in life, and they just weren't satisfying enough. I always wanted more. And so, you know, I was at my bottom when I ended up in a trailer that I said I would never party with this woman. I felt she was lower than me. And that's where I ended up the day before I was sentenced for a lot of criminal charges. And, you know, didn't see my kids before I went to jail. And I had been in and out of prison or, you know, just our county jail. And but when I got to that point, and I had been in and out of the rooms many a times, but I never got honest, and I was never open-minded, and I was never willing to do the things that, you know, people told me to do, like get a home group, get a sponsor, go to meetings. I had a sponsor at one time when I was, I don't know, probably 25 or something, and, you know, I was just very, like, the things she asked me to do, they made no sense to me. And I thought, why in the world would I do that? And it got me nowhere. So, you know, when I finally did come to the rooms, my clean date's January 7th of 06. And, but I was in prison, but they had meetings there. And, very thankful for that. But just to begin, like, with wanting to get honest, knowing that I had to get honest of doing some of the things that I had heard in the rooms, there, you know, the majority of people in prison today, are, most of them are, you know, had to deal with drugs. Some of the most beautiful people I ever met there killed people and are there for life. And it just gives me chills because they are truly beautiful people. And that's, I guess, where God wants them to be, because without those people, I wouldn't know the things I know today, because I did a drug treatment program there. And so, you know, I found people there that went down the same road I did. And, you know, we were supportive to each other, to tell each other that, you know, we're good people. We just made bad choices. And we can change. And it took me a long time to change in there, because I still wanted what I wanted when I wanted it. And I didn't want to follow the rules. And I still didn't want to, you know, take the cotton out of my, you know, ears and put it in my mouth and listen. But I knew, obviously, that I was an addict. You know, I could not do this on my own. I tried many and many times to do it my way. And, you know, people say, oh, well, you have kids, why can't you stop? Like, my son has a beautiful baby boy, and he's in addiction, and his girlfriend isn't, and she just doesn't understand why he can't just stop, you know. And it's very hard to explain to people that you got to get honest and be willing to make changes. You know, then when I came, got out of prison, and I was in a halfway house in Pittsburgh, I was scared to death. And, because I thought, downtown Pittsburgh, what are they thinking? But I was determined. I was determined to do what I had to do, because I had already wasted a lot of time. I could have been out of prison in a year, and I ended up spending 2 years there. And so I went to a meeting the first chance that I got. And my bunkie at the time, she, you know, she's like, hey, we could, you know, go shopping, or, you know, I'll sign your slip, you sign mine. And I wasn't about all that. I said, you don't understand. Like, I want to get this time. I've been doing this way too long, and my kids need me at home, and my family, and because they were unconditionally loving to me, and drove, you know, 4 hours to see me, and you know, I was just determined. And I went to this meeting on the south side, and it was kind of strange because in the summer then they had it outside, but there was a fence and there was an alley. And it was so full that I had to stand in the alley outside this fence. So it was kind of different because I wasn't on the inside of the fence. I was on the outside looking in, and I just cried and said, I'm scared to death, and I need help. And that's, you know, one of the first things that I think people need to do and learn to do is ask for help, because, you know, my way never worked. And, you know, and there was lots of love there, because I didn't yet love myself at all. And like Dave said, like, we don't ever have to be alone in this program. You don't have to, you know, love yourself when you come in here, because we will love you until you can love yourself, and you're worth it. And I knew I was worth it because I did have people that loved me, and I did have people that had faith in me, and I saw I had hope. And I knew that, you know, well, then when I went home, like, I saw people that were in the program, the many times I was in and out, and they were still there. And that gave me a sign that it works. I was just doing something, you know, I wasn't doing what they were telling me to do. You know, they said, if you follow in my footsteps, you don't ever have to use again. And, I had some reservations, and I think we all do when we come in and we're new. How are we ever going to have fun again? What are we going to do with our time? I filled that space with meetings, and, I got a home group. And I found a sponsor, and that takes some time. I mean, you know, people, you know, I had to, you know, find some people that I relate with. I met a kid on the sidewalk outside the Zion Lutheran Church, and I don't know, we clicked immediately, and I clung to him like there was no tomorrow. And even though he was a newcomer, too, we both had a little bit of recovery, and we both wanted to go to meetings. And you know, and I told him, I can't do this by myself. I need somebody. And he said, we can, you know. And he just wanted what I wanted, and we stuck by each other. And So I took those suggestions of doing 90 and 90, and I probably did more than that. You know, whenever there was a meeting, I was gone, and if my family, if my daughter, you know, said, do you really need to go to a meeting, Mom? Yeah, I do. If you don't keep your recovery first, you'll lose everything that you have, and I'm a firm believer in that. You know, I spoke of reservations. Every time I relapsed in those 30 years was because I thought I could drink alcohol. And alcohol is a drug. Every time I picked up a drink, I picked up a drug. And that's the progression. You know, it just never, I could never control my using. You know, so, like I said, we got honest, and I, you know, asked those questions to myself. Can I control my drug using? Obviously not. Am I willing to do whatever it takes? That's what my first sponsor asked me. And I said yes. And I was determined this time. And they said, you don't have to use no matter what. And I was like, okay, I'm going to try this. And things started changing in my life. I lived with my parents when I came home, and both my children were in their house. And thank goodness that they, I never was involved with any of those agencies to worry about that. I knew that my kids were being very well taken care of, which allowed me to, do what I had to do. One of the first things is to surrender. And for each one of us, I think that's, a very personal thing. I just kept going to meetings. Admitted I was powerless and, over my addiction. A God of my understanding, I had to find that higher power. I was raised in a religious family. And my dad was a minister. And so I kind of had a grip on, some people don't, though. And if you don't have a God of your understanding, I like to believe that it's like good orderly direction, just doing the next right thing. When we're kids, we're growing up, and we believe, if somebody tells you there's an Easter bunny, you betcha we believe. If there's a Santa Claus, we're right there because, he's bringing us gifts. So if somebody tells you that this program works, have faith because it does. It's amazing. I had a lot of gratitude when I came home because my family was, they did unconditionally love me. And they supported me. And my mom told me to, start finding a place to live. Go look for a place to live. Like, she had had my kids for 2 years and more because I'd been in and out of rehab way before that. And, I went to a couple places and I felt like embarrassed, had some shame and guilt, to tell people that, hey, I'm on state parole, I gotta have somebody come look at my house, And finally, I said something to one guy, and that, it seemed to go pretty well. And he's like, well, maybe this isn't your place to be, but somebody will rent to you. It wasn't him. And I thought, okay, great. And so the next place my daughter and I walked, well, my mom was just on me about it. And I said, don't you think it'd be good if I had a job first? And she said, no, we'll help you, And my parents are older. They're, in their 80s and late 80s. And so the next place I went to was my landlord was in the other fellowship. And it was a very, I still get chills about it today. I'm so grateful, and I still live there, and he has been very patient and kind and understanding. And then a couple weeks later, I got a job. And I started working the steps. And, like I said, I came to believe in the power greater myself that was, mostly in these rooms, even though I had a God of my understanding, I had faith in this program, and I felt the love in these rooms. And I procrastinated about the fourth step, and, I stumbled, and as long as I could. But it's really not that big a deal, I complicated it, and it was about finding out who I am, having a sponsor that I could trust and, work my fifth step and just dump all my, stuff out there was such a big relief. And, so I continued through those steps and, it gave me freedom. Made some amends, and I was scared about that because I thought, these people are going to laugh. You know, they're going to laugh and say, yeah, you've said that before. You know, but every one of those people today see the person that I am today. And that's a wonderful feeling. You know, and for me today to get some resentments some days and to be able to look at my part in that and admit that I'm wrong is big, you know, because I just wouldn't do that before. And it's funny when someone tells me I'm right today, because then I'm like, that's nice, because I like to hear that too. You know, having a conscious contact with my higher power on a daily basis through this Just for Today meditation, if you don't have one, get one, because that daily reflection sometime throughout your day will be there and somehow tie into your day. So I was supposed to talk about fatal in 5 minutes. But the fatal part of this disease won't take me long, because this is life or death. I found it, I can't even think of the word, but when Michelle asked me to do this, I was like, wow. I work in the recovery field, so I hear it a lot more than probably most. And I have a lot of personal relationships with people that that maybe at my heart, you know, I it goes out to them because I love my job. But people die of this disease. That's the bottom line. And when we're, you know, myself, when I said keep recovery first, I have to do that. Like, even if I work in recovery, like, I have to do my own recovery. That's not enough. I have to be of service. I have to give back, or I'm not going to have anything. And, a friend of mine, he had a few years clean, and he decided to go back out. Well, he didn't die, but he killed two people. And now he has to live with that. So it doesn't just affect us as a person, as an individual. It affects everyone in our lives. And that's fatal to me. If you want what we have, stick around. You can have it. Because you're worth it. That's it. Thank you.
All right, we're going to go ahead and take a break.